This is Ken Butcher, and we are at the Novels and Novelty Bookstore, and today I'm talking to Leanna Singh. Thanks for coming today, Leanna.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so before, there's a lot I want to talk to you about today, because you've done a lot of writing and a lot of interesting things. But let's start with Red Curtains. That's your latest book, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Red Curtains is a mystery set in Savannah, Georgia. My husband and I went down there for the first time for our 26th anniversary back several years ago. And when we were waiting for one of those little tour buses that comes and picks you up and takes you around the historical section, this individual's coming down the road towards us, talking to himself. I think it was a man, I'm not sure. But he had a long trench coat on and raggedy clothes, and I could tell that he was a homeless person. And the thing that stood out more than anything, though, was he had one of those court jester kind of hats,
right,
with the little dangly tails, had little jingle bells at the end, and he was kind of,
right,
shaking his head and bebopping along there. And he walked right past us and walked up to a mailbox that was nearby, and he proceeded to sprinkle some kind of invisible substance around,
oh, wow,
the mailbox, and he was chanting something, and I looked at my husband, and he looked at me, and we're going, okay. And so anyways, then the bus comes, and we get on the bus, and I'm immediately scrambling for paper in my purse and writing down notes, because my mind was just going,
right,
with the story. This was the story seed for Red Curtains. And in the book, I make this man a woman, and she is one of the main characters. Her name is Lily in the story. And since I didn't know anything, basically, about homelessness other than it's just a sad thing, I was having to do a lot of research, make sure everything's accurate in my stories. And the more I did the research, the heavier my heart got, because it was just such a sad, terrible thing.
Right.
The statistics are alarming, and they're growing, and it used to be that it was mostly men, don't know why, that were homeless, but there's a growing number of women with children that are homeless, and they're living in their cars if they have one, underneath overpasses, any place that they can find. There's several of the tent camps that are around the Savannah area that they're just booming with more people that they don't have room for them in the homeless shelters. So they're living in these tent shelters. And I actually, when we were down there, my husband and I were down at Savannah last weekend for the Rock and Roll Marathon. And we were talking to an individual, came up to us when we were eating that night in the city market. And he was a homeless man, and very personable. We enjoyed talking with him and everything, but he was talking about when the hurricane came and they made the homeless evacuate.
Right,
also,
right.
Well, they don't have anywhere to go, and the shelters are full. And he had ended up going a long way away. I can't remember where he ended up, but
did they provide some kind of transportation?
Yeah, they put him on buses and took him out of there. But anyway, the more I did the research for this, the worse I was feeling about it, and I thought, well, what can I do? Well, one, write a book that has a homeless character in it, so people are made aware of this problem if they're not aware already.
Right.
But in addition to that, I just felt like that I needed to do something more. So the proceeds of the sales of the book, after I pay the bills, you know, when I have buy my books and that kind of thing.
Right.
But the proceeds will go to the stand down program that I mentioned in the story. It's something for homeless veterans. They do a big thing at the Civic Center every year down in Savannah.
Uh-huh.
And they provide counseling for a lot of these veterans. They have PTSD and they can't hold down a job.
That's, right.
And so they end up losing their home and they're out on the streets. But this program provide the counseling for with PTSD. They provide job counseling, trying to get them ready for interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they also provide counseling as far as trying to find them homes, places that they can live. They'll give them a free haircut. They even they get a free teeth cleaning because,
right,
you know,
that's cool.
Free flu shots and everything. So anyways, that's where the money is going to be going to help support this program.
Now, this is obviously a really serious problem that's kind of at the base of this. But I started, I didn't get a chance to read the whole book, but I did start it, and it doesn't, it's not...
The book's
I don't
not,
want people to have the, right, the right. idea that this is like a heavy...
No, it's not. It's just the fact that one of the characters is homeless, and I had to do the research to get behind it. But it's really kind of lighthearted and funny.
That's what I was going to say.
It has some ghost characters in there, because Savannah's one of the most haunted cities in America. In the whole America, so
right.
So one of the characters is a ghost. Well, actually, there's a couple of characters that are ghosts, but anyways, so it's lighthearted. It makes it, it's a fun book. It's a fun read. It's a, has some romance in it, of course. You have to have romance to make a good story, right? But I just wanted to let people know that behind it,
there's a real cause.
The undercurrents kind of thing. There is a real cause, and the money will be going to help towards that.
Well, that's really thoughtful. So, one thing that doing this podcast has got me into is genres that I ordinarily wouldn't be reading or knowing anything about. So, I there were a couple phrases about your genre that caught my eye when I looked at the books and looked at the website and so forth. One is romantic suspense novels.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I expect in a romantic suspense novel?
Romantic suspense. You have the suspense, the sitting on the edge of your seat kind of thing.
Right.
There's something that... Well, one of the things that's in this book is you have a... main character, one of the main characters is Lily, the homeless woman. She finds a bag of counterfeit money in the trash when she's pilfering through the trash in the night.
Uh-huh.
And she also witnesses a murder by accident.
Okay.
Problem with that, there's two problems actually. She can't go to the police because the police don't put a lot of stock in what the homeless have to say.
Okay.
And number two is who did the murder. And I won't tell you anything more about that.
Okay, we won't get in.
Right.
We won't give the ending away.
Right, right. So the suspense part is how that the bag of counterfeit money and the murder ties in with that. One of the other main characters is Jonas Holmes. He's a investigative reporter for the Savannah Tribune, and he's investigating the story why homeless men keep on showing up, and the bodies of homeless men keep showing up in the Savannah River.
Right.
And he can't get any of the homeless to talk to him because they're scared. And so he hooks up with Lily, the homeless woman, and Cleo, which is another one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
She's a senior student at Savannah College of Art and Design. And anyways, the three of them together work to find out what's behind all this and tie it all together. And there's some surprise twists and turns as you go.
Okay.
So.
All right. And when did this book come out?
It just came out in September, actually, the end of September.
Cool. So you're just in your promotional phase
mm-hmm.
here.
Yes.
That's great. So, all right. I got to ask you about another phrase I read there.
Okay.
Grit lit.
You know what grit stands for?
Girls raised in the South.
Right. So everyone, this book is actually the first book in the trilogy.
Context, anyway.
Yes, it's in my new trilogy, or my new series is called Grits Books, and each one of them is set somewhere in the South, and they all feature strong, creative Southern women,
uh-huh.
or grits, if you will, and that's what it is, grit lip.
And where did you grow up? You grew up around here? Or?
Yeah, well, my dad was in the Navy, so we kind of moved around. But I was born in Greensboro, and I've lived in Henderson County for the last 25 years.
So you have a little farm, if I
mm-hmm.
remember right.
Yes,
what's
we have.
That like? Sounds pretty picturesque.
It is. It's one of the prettiest places in the county. It's right before you go down the mountain into South Carolina.
Okay.
We have a range of mountains directly across from our house, and the top of it is where South Carolina starts.
Okay.
So the name of our farm is Miracle Hill Farm, and we used to raise dairy goats, but we sold those a couple of years ago because we were getting too much milk. I was having to make cheese every day.
That's a commitment, isn't
it?
Yes,
it is.
You've got to milk them twice a day?
Yes, twice a day.
Every day.
Every day.
There's no taking Sundays off.
It's hard to go out of town anywhere because you have to find somebody that knows how to milk a goat.
Yeah.
So, but we still have chickens, and we would like to get goats again one of these days, but probably not dairy goats. We'll do meat goats instead.
Right. Now, let's go back in time a little bit.
Okay.
You had a trilogy called the Gate to Nowhere trilogy.
Right.
And so tell us a little bit about that. And you also won some awards for that, right?
Yes.
So tell us about the award. Tell us about the series a little bit.
Okay.
And a little bit about the awards, too.
All right. The series is set here in Henderson County. I was picturing the Edneyville area with all of its apple orchards when I was writing the book. The idea for the first book actually came from when we were over at a friend's house for a Halloween party. After we got finished eating dinner, we all grabbed flashlights and went on a hike out to a spooky graveyard out behind her house.
Okay.
And we looked, we were looking across the
land. Was this in Henderson County?
Yes, it is. It's over out Fruitland Road.
Okay.
And so after we got finished with our hike out to the graveyard, we came back and...
That already sounds pretty spooky.
Well, it was, especially with this big fat full moon. It was a perfect Halloween night, by the way. But we were coming back and my flashlight kind of glanced over to the side, to the right, and it spotlighted this gate. And, well, you think, okay, they lived on a farm. It's a 100-year-old farm, or maybe more than a 100-year-old farm, and gates go with farms. That's fine.
Right.
But the thing about this gate, it didn't have a fence attached. It was just the gate.
Just sitting there
all by itself at the edge of the pasture, and it looked so weird. And I asked Lisa, I said, why do you have a gate with no fence? And she said, it was here when we bought the farm. I don't know. And I said, well, there has to be a story behind it. And I kind of was goofing off, and I went, doom, doom, doom. The Gate to Nowhere.
The Gate to Nowhere.
And she started laughing, and she said, that sounds the name of a book. And I said, yeah, it does. And she said, well, why don't you write it? And I thought, well, maybe I will. And that was the start to the story. In my mind, I was thinking, what if you could go through this gate and end up in a place called Nowhere?
Right.
And I thought, well, take it a step further. What if it was the Cherokee word for nowhere, and this was, it will take you back to when the Cherokee still roamed around the area. And it just kept going from that, and that is where the story seed for Gate to Nowhere came from. And in the book, Emma Franklin inherits a farm from her grandmother, and when she arrives on the farm, one of the first things she sees is this old iron gate sitting at the edge of the property.
Right.
No fence, just the gate.
And I read some of this, because you know the minute you read that, she's going to go through that gate and something's going to happen.
Right, right. It takes
you can't wait for that
right.
to happen.
Right. It takes her 177 years into the past. And the first person she meets is her ancestor.
Right.
And solves a mystery, keeps someone from getting killed who would have otherwise been killed. And basically, she changes history around. And when I got to the end of that book, I had fallen in love with these characters so much that I didn't want to let them go. So I thought, I kind of set it up for that it could continue on. So I wrote the second book.
I was going to ask you about that, whether you planned out the whole trilogy. So
nope,
it was more organic than that.
It was organic. Yes, it was. The characters kind of just made it happen. So it continues to follow that family through it starts in the 1820s and it takes them through the 1840s into the 1860s during the Civil War.
Okay.
And that's where it all ends up there.
All right.
And
here's the impression I got. When I was reading that, I felt like once you got Emma through the gate, you were really having fun with that.
Oh, well,
I really, is that true?
Yes.
Do you feel that way?
Well, see, I love history anyway, so I had to do a lot of research on that too, because I wanted to make them historically accurate. I didn't want them to just be the typical time travel.
Right.
When people hear that, they kind of get turned off. But it was so historically accurate, all three books won the Clark Cox Historical Fiction Award from the North Carolina Society of Historians.
That's really good.
Yeah, so they agreed that everything was all historically accurate. I learned a lot, especially, well, all along. But the second one was dealing with medical practices during the 1840s in the mountains.
Right.
Kind of scary.
I bet it was.
I don't know how people actually lived through some of those treatments, and some of, a lot of them probably didn't.
Right.
I mean, something like smearing cow manure on burns. not a good thing. But anyway, so I learned a lot about the white man's, so to speak, medical practices, but it also deals with the Cherokee Indian, their green medicine, and the way that they use the plants and made medicines out of that. And so I learned lots about that. I learned a lot about the Cherokees. It was a lot of fun to do, especially that second one. And then the third one, I love Civil War history.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that. So that was a lot of fun too. So they were fun to write because I do love history so much.
And I was a little unclear about that. I saw somewhere in the description that they are targeted for young adults. Is that right?
No.
When I started reading it, I thought, this doesn't
I think
seem
maybe
like
because
a,
there were time travel, maybe people thought that, I don't know.
Okay.
But the second, after the trilogy, I did a standalone book called Wish. That one is...
Oh, maybe that's where I picked it up and I was getting confused about which
book
they're
talking
about.
That one was geared towards a young adult audience. Okay. So...
So... That sounds really interesting trilogy. And what was the other book you mentioned?
Wish.
And what is that about? I didn't see that one.
That one is a kind of a odd man out kind of thing. Number one, it's geared to the young adult audience, which young adults like my books, but that's not who they're geared towards most of the time.
Right.
But it's set in New York City.
Okay.
And...
A little bit different.
Why? I don't know. That one, it just needed to be told. The story seed for that one came from my cousin. She had gone with a church group up to New York City for a tour, and one of the things that they did, they went to Macy's, and she took a picture of their Believe Meter.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever seen the Believe Meter. Believe Meter, yes. You can. It has Wish, Dream, Imagine, and something else. I can't remember across the screen. It looks like a clock,
right?
But it just has one hand instead of two.
Mm-hmm.
And it points at one of these, you can see the little gears and cogs and things going on in there. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, that'd be cool if you could make it something happen where your wish would actually come true.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, I used December 12th, 2012, 12-12-12.
Okay.
And if you went to the Believe Meter on the specific day and made a wish at exactly 12 minutes after noon,
uh-huh,
the 5-12s would make some kind of magic, and whatever you wish would come true.
Uh-huh.
And the main character went there, and she wished to see her father again. And the problem is, her father's been dead for 2 years.
Right.
And the story's about what happens after she makes her wish.
Okay.
So,
cool.
Anyway, that one's kind of a weird one, but it's a story that it had to be written, so... I wrote it, got it out of my system, and then I'm going back to my Gritlick books. So,
okay. Well, now, before you got into all the writing, if I understood right from your website, you're trained as an artist, right?
Yes, I was a commercial art major in college.
So tell us about your artwork.
I do portraits, mostly.
Uh-huh. What kind of medium?
Pastels and colored pencils.
Oh.
And I love that, and that's kind of like a side thing. People get in touch with me and commission me to do portraits and everything.
Uh-huh.
I especially love to do children and animals.
Uh-huh.
That's my specialty, but I've done all kinds of... I've actually done two different portraits of people that have already passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And have to do everything by photographs because, of course,
right,
you can't take any... You know, can't meet them in person.
Right.
But it's fun. I enjoy that a lot. And I...
And where did you train to do that?
At a Christian college down in Florida.
Okay.
Yep. And anyways, that's a little side thing. I was an art major, and then I was an English minor. So to me, I had the best of both worlds. So I got to write.
Have you thought about doing a children's book illustrated?
I actually have. I've done several of them, but they were just for my kids.
Okay.
Maybe one of these days, that's not in the cards right now.
Do you have any of your artwork on your website?
No, I don't.
I was looking for it, and I thought...
I need to put some on there. But
it would be interesting.
Yeah. Post a few photographs of it. But everything I have is all... It's all the photographs I have are all snapshots, not digitalized. I would have to get them somehow get them digitalized, and I'm not really techno savvy, so
okay.
I have to get somebody to help me with that.
Now, here's another tidbit I got off your website or somewhere, that you had met Tasha Tudor twice.
Yes.
So for people who don't know who she is, who is Tasha Tudor and how did you come to meet her?
Tasha Tudor was, she's dead now, but she was one of the most amazing women that I've ever met. I discovered her when I was in college. One of the classes that I had to take was with dealing with children's books illustrators.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to pick an artist, writer slash artist, and do in-depth study on them. And we had to do a project that would kind of try to copy their art style as
right.
much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I discovered her, and she has, if you've never seen any of her illustrations or any of her books, you need to go find one.
What's your favorite one? Do you have a favorite?
Oh, my goodness. No, they're all my favorites. her art is like old-timey, from the past. She dressed like that. She wore clothes from the 1800s.
I saw a picture of her dressed like that, and I thought, wait a minute. This is someone from the 1800s, and you met her. So
no,
how did that? She just adopted that lifestyle.
Yes, she did. She had a huge collection of antique clothing that they actually put in a museum and stuff now for mm-hmm. for her since she passed on. But she dressed like that. She did not have running water or electricity in her home.
Where did she live? Massachusetts?
In Vermont.
Vermont.
Yes, she had a 200 acre farm up
uh-huh.
there, and she raised dairy goats and chickens
okay.
and did milk. Her did her own milk.
She did
and,
have an influence.
Yes,
on you, didn't she
did. She did, and she cooked on a wood stove, and she had a water pump in her kitchen, and. That's how she lived. She lived like she was in the 1800s. She had four kids that she raised in a house with no running water and no electricity.
Right.
And everything. So she was just a fascinating individual. My husband, unbeknownst to me back then, for my birthday, he knew how much I loved her books and how much I just admired her. And he had got on eBay and found several of her books and mm-hmm. added to my Tasha Tudor collection. And he also, and while he was doing that, he found that they, one weekend in the spring, in May, they would invite, or you could get tickets for, it was called Springs of Joy.
Right.
It was one Saturday and one Sunday. They would have like 15 people come in each day that bought tickets, and they would have... you would have a tea party with recipes from Tasha's cookbook, and you would do crafts that were according to that time, and we get to meet Tasha and tour her gardens and see her home. We couldn't go inside her home, but we could see her home from the outside. We got to tour in her barn.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, she's famous. She was famous for her gardens and as well as her art, but she was just the coolest person in the world. But she wouldn't allow any photographs of her.
Oh, really?
And there was one, when we were leaving, she had told us all goodbye, and she had turned around, and she was walking down the little pathway back to her home, and she was, another thing she's famous for, she always had a little corgi dog. She,
right.
she loved corgis. So she's walking down this pathway, and here she is in her long dress, and her little kerchief on her head, and her scarf, you know, a little shawl around her shoulders. She's walking down this trail. And she's looking down, and the dog is looking up, and it mm-hmm. was the perfect shot. And I thought, mm-hmm. I asked the girl, I said, please, can I just one photograph? It's of her back. She's not even, you don't even see her face. She
right.
says, no, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I got home, I told my husband about it, and he says, well, maybe you can go up and see her and sit and sketch, do a sketch of her.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, right, that's going to happen. And he says, well, we'll see. And so he contacted Seth, her oldest son. He was kind of like, the gatekeeper, I guess,
right,
for Tasha, all things Tasha. And he contacted Seth, and Seth wrote back and said, well, we haven't ever done anything like that before. And I took it that to mean, leave it alone. No way. And my husband says, well, he didn't say no.
That's not exactly a no.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's what he meant. He says, well, we'll see. So he contacted him again, and he worked it out where I got to go up and sit on Tasha's little back porch with her and have tea with her.
Oh, my gosh.
Her and Seth and her grandson, Winslow, came in at one time. And we were all out there having tea. And she was as sharp as a tack, buddy. She was...
How old was she at the time?
In her late 80s.
Wow.
Yeah. She was sharp, good questions, and I was just sketching away on, and anyways, I did a portrait of her and I sent it to her, and I think that they might have put it in their museum up there, nice. Tasha Museum. So
it seemed to me almost like she was carrying on the tradition of Beatrice Potter.
Kind of, you know, well, her artwork was big, similar to that.
The whole gardening thing,
mm-hmm,
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. That's great.
She was a great lady.
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you a little bit about your approach to writing, your writing habits. Are you a person that outlines in any detail, or do you kind of go by the seat of your pants?
I'm a pantser.
Pantser.
Well, I kind of know where I want to start, and I kind of know sort of where I want to end it, mm-hmm. and I know a few things along the way that I want to incorporate into the story.
Right.
But basically, I just start and I get into it so much where the characters kind of take over at some points, and all I'm doing is hanging on for the ride.
Okay. And you write how often? Every day?
I would love to be able to write every day, but that doesn't happen a lot of times because my husband and I own a retail store up in South Asheville. We sell Amish furniture.
Okay.
And that keeps
life gets in the way, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, kinda. It's not as bad now without the goats. During the summer, it's pretty bad because I have a garden and I'm trying to keep up with the garden and uh-huh. keep up with the yard and everything, plus the store. So it's kind of I write when I can. I squeeze it
and
in.
And where
I can.
Do you write?
I have my eldest son's ex room has turned into my office, and that is my writing place. And then I also try to get away every year for a week to some place where I can do nothing but write.
Oh, that's interesting.
From the time I wake up to the time I go to sleep at night, I write mm-hmm. all day long, and I can turn out quite a few words in a week's time
mm-hmm.
with no interruptions.
So you get off all by yourself?
Mm-hmm. No interruptions. Don't have to worry about fixing.
Where do you go?
I've gone
is that
to
a secret?
I've gone to a little cabin up in Maggie Valley for several years, and then I have a friend who lets me have a place down along the coast, South Carolina, between South Carolina and Savannah.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
They both sound nice.
Yes.
Okay, well, I want to ask you, first of all, thanks again for doing this, but I want to ask before we go, how do people keep up with what you're doing? Is the website the best thing?
My website, and I'm on Facebook a lot. I have an author page on Facebook.
Okay.
So.
And your website is what?
www.leannasane.com.
And that's S-A-I-N?
Yes, it is.
Like most writers, no one would accuse you of being the other kind of sane, right?
Right.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you very much, Leanne.
Thank you very much, Ken.
All right. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Leanna and to the Novels and Novelties Bookstore. To listen to other episodes and sign up for a subscription, visit our website at themiddleoftheair.com. See you next time.